June 27, 2021. It's a lot from Pete Rose Show.
Thank you. with spineless scales. With pyramidal whorls. The crown is open. Twisted and dwarfed in exposed locations. They do not disintegrate.
For Pedro's show, happy Sunday. Kind of different, but I'm doing Sunday because we got to celebrate the release of a brand new Proj. And I started the show with Black Pearls from John Coltrane. And then what I'm referring to, Rambutan, is this Proj. And it's a big collab. And the man who behind it is going to be guest today and explain about it. But this was the, I've already played two systems. They're divided up into 33 systems. I played two. We're going to do 11 this show and then play the rest on other episodes, future. But this was Parallel Systems, system number 3. And it had Jeff Barsky, UN Curry. You could tell I'm not man alone because there's a bunch of fucking noise coming over the line. But, and we'll get there. Karen Schomer, Frank Val, and Eric Hardiman. Speaking of Eric Hardiman, Brother Matt, he's still, yeah, that's where Racket's coming, like from New York State, upstate. Because Brother Matt is still at the Love, well, he always is going to be at the Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point, but I'm not with him. I'm here in my pad a couple miles away, but I'm not totally man alone, as you can tell by all that fucking noise. The software engineers in Estonia with their incredible Skype invention, I'm able to talk to Eric Hardiman and all his accompanying noise. Welcome aboard, Eric.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
Now, people, Brother Eric is a fellow bass man. So we're going to be very interested in his journey from music. So, Eric, if you would, bring your earliest musical recollection, please.
Yeah, so I was thinking about that. My earliest musical recollection is not so much about instruments, per se, but listening to records.
I said music. Because yeah, I think music was around way before humans were.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was listening to records on my parents' record player, and I found out that you could change the speed on it. And I used to love to change the speed and listen to records at the wrong speed. And then I would tape them, and I'd make these weird-sounding tapes with records at the wrong speed. And that's kind of my earliest memory.
Are you familiar with a comedy duo named Cheech and Chong?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, what are the bits? I don't know which one, the yellow one or Big Bamboo or whatever the fuck, but the guy comes, hey, man, right? I think he's known as Man, right? The character that Tommy Chong is playing. What are you doing? I'm listening, I'm making table candles. He goes, table candles? Yeah, I pour wax on the table, light on fire, listen to Black Sabbath at 45.
Nice. So that's my, I can relate to that.
That's my wrong record speed joke. I still
like doing it. I still like listening to things at the wrong speed. It kind of gives me a weird pleasure.
Well, people can help out by not putting the fucking info on the label so you get it all wrong and shit. Like, now, where was this?
This was in Annandale, Virginia.
Okay.
So now just outside of D.C.
Now, the pad you grew up, was there any instruments in the house?
Yeah, no instruments that I can think of. We might have had like a plastic recorder or something, but not really. Like no one played music in my house.
Now, you know, Michael, I had a guest on a couple of weeks ago, and he told me in his mind, and I agreed with him, the record player can be an instrument.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I agree.
Okay, so can I ask you the first record you bought with your own money?
Yeah, so the first record I ever got, this wasn't my own money, but first record I, actually, let me answer your question.
No,
first.
No, that's first. Important. It's your own money, because when you're a kid, you ain't okay. Got a lot of money. So you got to make a real hard choice, right?
This was a secret purchase without my folks knowing about it. I bought
that's
Kiss
okay.
Destroyer, because I knew they wouldn't approve, so I bought it.
You didn't do it for the music. You did it just to piss off your parents.
No, I was totally into the music. It wasn't so much about that, but it was just about, like, worried about what their reaction would be when they saw the cover.
Okay. I love
the music.
Now, me and D-Boom, we saw Kiss maybe 3 or 4 times before they even had the first album. And I remember when that album came out, we said, man, is it slow? Because it wasn't like the gigs. But by the record you're talking about, we weren't listening to it anymore. But the one we liked a lot was Hotter Than Hell.
Oh, yeah, I liked all the first couple,
Let me ask you, first gig you went and saw.
First gig I ever saw was X, the band X from L.A.
Yeah, because there's an X spelled different in Holland.
Oh yeah, not them. I've seen them, but the first gig was X with the Fleshtones opening up in Washington D.C.
X is a band here. Yeah, Billy Zoom, John Doe, Exene.
Yeah.
I think only Don Bonebreak. He's from the Val, but the other people were all from out of state. Well, you know, I am too. I'm from Virginia, you know. So they probably were on tour.
They were on tour. It was 82, so I think they were promoting that. What was that film? Erg, A Music War? I think.
I remember that. That was IRS, though, right? The record company.
Yeah, exactly.
Caribou's pretty interesting. I think Suburban Lawns are in that. And maybe even Alley Cats, which was another Hollywood scene.
X kind of blew my mind, man. A friend's older brother took us to that show, and I was pretty young, and it was pretty life-changing.
They're a good band. Good band. Yeah. Again, I put John Doe in one of my Minuteman songs. Can I ask you about school? Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
Not choir, not marching band, but I played in like the orchestra kind of deal. So I played cello. Started cello, I think, in like third grade.
Yeah, cello is very interesting. Now,
yeah,
the range is huge. You know, the only thing I find a little weird about it is the way you have to play it between your legs like that. But it's incredible. And then because of the fifth thing, the jumps between the strings got so much drama.
Yeah, I gave it up pretty quick. I think I only stuck with it for a year or two because it was tough for me. But that's what I started with, yeah.
Okay, so did you learn to read?
I did. You know, they used like I think it was called the Suzuki method or something. It was like some 70s kind of like teaching method. But, yeah, I learned to read a little bit, but never very well.
Yeah, I didn't mean playing. I mean, you know, not tablature either. Man, what a funky ass. I mean, that's hard too, the traditional way. The tabs are like lame ass.
I don't know, man.
I'd say go for the traditional over tabs or some thing you figure out yourself, right? Like a little, especially you got bad eyes. How do you read? So come up. I've had to come up with half asses, you know, things like this. And I'm just curious.
Yeah,
everybody
comes
from a different place in the thing. Now, you end up on bass guitar, so. What was the move from cello? What did you get your first bass?
Well, I was an adult when I got my first bass, so it was only like maybe a dozen years ago. So I went from cello to clarinet in high school and then to bass clarinet, like Dolphy, you know, played the bass clarinet for a couple of years.
Okay, so you don't give up on, this is all school stuff or on your own?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. No, this is all school stuff, yeah.
And when you graduate, so if you're doing clarinet and bass clarinet after school, I'm not talking about graduate, but in the afternoon, you didn't do or did you do basement bands, bedroom band, garage bands with those instruments?
Never did. I didn't know a lot of other kids who were into the same stuff I was into. So I, you know, never did that.
Oh, okay. And, after graduating school, and you go, do you do the college thing?
Yeah, but before that last year of high school, I bought a guitar.
Oh, okay. So you move on to another instrument. Okay.
Yep, I was still playing clarinet, but I moved on to guitar. I bought a guitar pretty cheaply. I bought a Mosrite, an old hollow body Mosrite guitar, and taught myself how to play.
You know, clarinets are B flat. What are bass clarinets? Are they B flat too?
Bass clarinets are E flat.
E flat. That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that was a little bit of
an. And you know what? You can't go over to the sax, right? Because the buttons are just because there's holes and shit, right? Different thing.
Yeah. Although recently I went over to tenor about 5 or 6 years ago, just because I found one and started playing tenor, and man, I picked it up really quickly. I think.
Oh, that's right. You know, brother Steve from the Stooges told me. One way was easier. Maybe if you're a clarinet man, you can go to sax man, but a sax man finds it really hard to go to clarinet.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Even though they're related, right? I've seen some of the first ever made at the Music Museum in Brussels, Adolf Sax. He used to be on the, I think it was the 5-franc note or something. But okay, so you get a guitar, and it's electric, but it's kind of acoustic. So you must have got an amp with it?
I got an amp, yep.
And so what do? You start playing with the buddies to kiss songs?
No, I mean, actually, a couple buddies and I would sit around in, you know, each other's houses, and we would teach ourselves R.E.M. songs. We would have Double Nickels on the Dime, and we'd figure out songs from that. That was pretty critical for us. But never in a band situation. Just like, you know, I'd figure out a lick and show it to my friend, and, you know, it's kind of like that, just for fun.
And also a formal thing, autodidact, right? You're teaching each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
totally. Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
So stumbled through it and stuff. And not just copying. Did you start writing your own stuff?
Not really. I mean, I tried a couple times and was never happy with it. So I kind of, you know, lost confidence, gave up. So not really, no.
But your friends, you're playing, there was a culture of that. Were some of them writing songs?
No, we were all just learning songs. Because it was just like, none of them ever were in bands. You know, I'm sorry, I had one friend who was in a band, but the rest of us weren't. so we were just kind of...
very casual.
Yeah, we were happy to learn a good song and be able to play it.
Yeah, you know? I want to play another system, okay? This is number four. Thank you.
get to the bar, the name of that bar, the bar is called Heaven. And the band in Heaven, they play your favorite song, they'll play it one more time, then play it all night long. Nothing at all could ever be so exciting, could be that much fun. Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. That chunk of music started with System 4 from Parallel Systems, Rabaton, Proj, Gail Brogan, Andrew Payne. I'm in this one. Kevin McCardle, and of course, Chris Robert, and then finally the ringleader, Eric Hardimus. So now you got this guitar, you're just playing with your friends, and not a real band, you're not doing gigs or stuff like this. How far do you take the guitar?
You know, I just kept playing it at home, and then I went off to college. I started doing college radio. That's where I met Karen. We were at the same radio station.
But is your major, do you study music at college?
No, not at all. No, this is always just like an extra hobby kind of thing for me.
But you do get into the radio. You know, this was different than my college days. The college radio scene starting in the 80s, you know, and yeah. DJs could have their own fucking shows. No playlists, no program director program dictator, right?
I started doing it in high school, actually. A local college allowed me to have a show as a high school student. Actually, and then I kept doing it through college, and I still do college radio now.
I got to tell you, REM, we got to give credit to, because they really, you know, the punk scene wasn't really a college thing until those guys kind of broke it open. So
totally.
Grateful to them. And so you had your own, so having your own show, that means buttloads of records. So you're getting exposed to all kinds of music.
That was the whole point. I liked the DJ part, but really it was all about just exploring, you know, new records and finding new sounds.
Yeah, but what I'm wondering is it's like making you get the hankering to get a band, to get your own music going.
Yeah, it was. So in college I tried a couple times to get bands together. And, you know, we had folks that practiced and just never went anywhere. I think it was all kind of personality stuff and lack of equipment.
So, you mean you never did a gig?
So I did an acoustic gig once during college.
Was it Man Alone?
What's that?
Was it Man Alone?
No, it was a duo. I played the acoustic guitar, and another dude played the acoustic guitar and sang.
Now, how'd it go? Did you guys have
it? It was good. Yeah, it was good. You know, I think it gave me a little taste of it.
Did you guys have a name?
No name, no. I don't know. I think we just went by our own names.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. And what was it, like RFK Stadium or?
No, this was in Williamsburg, Virginia, so where we went to college, and it was just
William and Mary.
Yeah, William and Mary. That's
the third oldest school, and it's in the fucking Steely Dan song.
Yeah, it is. You got it. So, yeah, so we did that one gig, and that was kind of it. And then, you know, I tried to make bands happen even after college. Had a band that practiced for about 6 months, and we got pretty decent, but never went anywhere, never did a gig, never came up with a name. So, yeah, that's kind of the early journey.
And you know, I don't think that was wasted time, because whenever you play, you're invested in the next time you play.
Absolutely. But I gave it up. You know, I gave it up in 1991 because I was just kind of like, this is not going to happen. I wasn't interested, like the egos and personality of people involved.
Terrible. Like, horror. Like Mr. Marlon Blando said, right? The horror.
Totally.
You know, they didn't know how to end that fucking movie. He saved that movie.
Yes, he did.
The guy who couldn't remember his words, but he remembered how the book ended. So fuck it, right? Thank you, Mr. Brando, I should say. Okay, so you give it up. But you say you got a bass 12 years ago. Now, if I'm doing some math here, 1991, 2009,
yeah,
for 18 years... You don't play?
Well, no, for 15 years. So 2006, I meet a friend of mine in Albany, New York, Jackson Wingate. He's a buddy of mine, and he's got this band called Burn Hills. And he invites me to sit in with them. And, you know, I kind of say, hey, man, I haven't played guitar in a long time. I'm no good. You don't need me pulling your band down. And he says, no, just come join us. Sit in, see what happens. And I still am in that band. I've been in that band for over 15 years now. So that got me going back again in 2006. And then must have been 2008 or 2009, the bass player kind of faded away. And we had a hole, and I saw this bass in the corner, and I was like, you know, I'll give it a shot. I've never touched a bass, but I'll give it a shot. And then I became the bass player in Burn Hills, and now I play bass in lots of different bands, and I love playing bass.
Yeah, it's weird how many people got going on bass because no one else in the band wanted to rock it. Fucking dicks. But you know what? It's all right. It left space for us. I thank D. Boone's Ma every fucking night for letting me, putting me on bass, because it was a great gift for her. So tell me about the first gig you did playing bass.
First gig I did playing bass. Man, I don't remember what the first gig was, but so the way Burn Hills works is we always play in the same basement, and then we invite other bands to come in and play in the basement with us. So that's the gig. It's like a house party.
You don't remember the first time you played bass in front of people? Oh, so it was so casual.
It seemed like
a practice or something.
Yeah, totally, totally. So, and I picked it up really easily. And like my bass, you know, the person I wanted to sound like was Lemmy. I wanted to play like Lemmy, and I still do, kind of.
Did you ever get to meet him? Nice guy.
I never met him, but I'm a huge Hawkwind fan. Like, I love that stuff dearly.
Silver Machine.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah, me too.
So my first bass was a PVT-40.
Oh, yeah, somebody gave me one of those in Nashville once. And the next gig was Birmingham. And there was a band already at the pad conked from the night before. And I said, hey, you need a bass? I didn't have it that long. But my first bass amp Minuteman was a PV-400.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, what was your first bass amp?
My first bass amp was I still have it. It's a Trainer YBA. Yeah, it's a Trainer YBA. It's a big
amp. You know who like Trainers?
Who's that?
Ron Ashton.
Are you serious? I didn't know that.
I wouldn't shoot you, Eric.
Now, all right.
And now that the bass, although he did play a bass one, because, you know, he was a bass player first, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I love Trainer. Love Trainer.
Okay. A little heavy nowadays, right? We got these little light ones. But
yeah.
What about the first time you recorded with the bass? Was it with the Burn Hills?
Yeah, it was with Burn Hills for sure. We record every time we never call it practice. Like, the deal with Burn Hills was we would play every Monday night from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, 1 hour, pure, solid, just one piece. We'd play, you know, turn off the lights at 8 o'clock, start playing. Nobody knows what key we're in. Nobody knows where it's going to go. And Jack always said it's like surfing. You just start surfing, and you take the wave where it goes. And it taught me a lot about improv.
Okay, yeah, yeah, of course, because there's no tunes.
Yeah, but he was awesome because he said, you know, you can't make a mistake, man. You make a mistake, just keep going, no big deal. So it was super fun to explore riffs and explore, you know, different sounds with the bass, and total freedom.
I'm not used to it. It is, right? You said it's a going concern.
It is. We kind of scaled back to like once a month now instead of once a week. But yeah, we're still going.
Okay. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, June 27, 2021, edition of Watt Peter Show. Special guest, Eric Hardiman. Hold tight for hour two. June 27, 2021. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
measured in runs. Measured in overs. Measured in
I'm sorry. I'm going to go to the hospital.
Watt for Pedro show. We start off the second hour with System 6 from the Parallel Systems Rambutan Proj. This one's got Guy Picciotto, Michael Kiefer, Mike Griffin, Glenn Galloway, and Eric Hardiman. Then we have Ben Salter featuring Captain Fightin' Machine. That's a good name. Thank you, Bob.
Yeah, I like it.
Thank you, Dad. Measure. And then I love looking at my face from Justice Yellum, Brother Lucas from nearby Sydney, the Pride of Johnson County from Sam Lock Ward in Iowa City, Bob Bucko Jr. from nearby Dubuque, Iowa. A box of sand is a box of dirt. And then Parallel Systems, System 7, Rambutan, Peter Peshkot, drummer man, from Mission of Burma.
Yeah.
And but now the guitar man for Mini Beast out of Providence. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Life's about change. Andreas Brandi, Derek Rogers, and Graham Hardiman. Is this a relation?
Yeah. Yes, my son. He's the Ornette, you know, or the DiNardo.
DiNardo, right. Prime
yeah,
time.
Yeah, DiNardo, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's my son.
Okay. And that was number seven of the System 7 from Parallel Systems, Robotop. So let's learn about Robotop.
Yeah. So at some point in the Burn Hills thing, I started playing in a lot of side projects, started doing a band called Century Plants. That was a duo with Ray Hare, who was a singer of that band Deadline. I don't know if you remember them. They were on Flex Your Head. Anyways, we had a duo. I had lots of different projects going, and I I'm always like, my head is full of music all the time, and it's like trying to come out. So I started thinking, record down in my basement late at night, just start recording some just solo jams, and kind of started making CDRs of them and sending them to friends, and I needed a name for it, so I came up with this silly name, Rambutan.
Yeah. Is it mysterious? I mean, is it put together? Is it invented? What's it from?
No, it's a fruit. It's kind of like a pear, but it's a fruit in Southeast Asia. I traveled over in Indonesia once, and I was exposed to these. It's kind of silly. They're called the hairy fruit because they've got all these little hairs that come out of it. And they joke around.
Well, you know, Asian pears are round. Is it a sphere?
It is a sphere, yeah. It looks kind of like a tennis ball size kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, I've had Korean ones that are biggest size grapefruits.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I didn't know if that was the name, but okay. what language?
I think it's Indonesian. It's either Thai or Indonesian.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for teaching me. That's why I wanted you on the show so you could light my ignorant ass. Now, what was the first Rambutan? So you're saying you were in the basement jamming, but then it turns into this clap, right? It kind of changes into a clap?
So I started I've done a couple records, a lot of tapes, a lot of CDRs as Rambutan, just solo things. And then once the pandemic hit, I was stuck at home. None of my bands were playing because, we couldn't, no practice. And I was just kind of getting frustrated with doing the solo thing. So I decided to invite a couple of my pals, mostly people in Albany, but a couple of people a little further afield, to send me. I said, hey, just send me a recording, whatever you want. You can make it on your phone. You can make it, professional recording, whatever you want to do. Send me a few minutes. And trust me, and I'll kind of tweak it and work it together and manipulate it and all that good stuff. And I think I got maybe 7 or 8 people who sent me stuff. I started making tracks with it, and it was so much fun. It was so incredible that I started asking more people and more people, and it just kind of grew and grew until it got to be almost 70 people.
Okay. I want to play System 8.
triangular tips. Ovoid cones. Becomes twisted and dwarfed in exposed locations.
Watt for Pedro show, that chunk of music started off Parallel System, System 8 from the Rambutan Prodge. And this one had Campbell Neal, Ray Hare, Sidra Berga, John Olson, Karen Schomer, and lost my place here. Eric Hardiman, of course. Well, you could have helped me, brother.
I didn't have my memory going.
Oh, no, but you put it to, you must have heard this shit like thousands of times. Well, let's talk about how this thing came to. Okay, people submit their parts and shit, but you must have, in between getting back into music, getting trading the guitar for the bass, you must have set up a studio in your pad.
I mean, it's kind of a studio. I got a four-track. I got, you know, Zoom recorders. I got a bunch of different, you know, I kind of pick up cheap gear. I'm a bottom feeder with gear. I just buy cheap stuff whenever I see it at garage sales and that kind of thing. So I got a basement full of, I mean, I got timpani down there. I got a drum set. I got a bunch of
gear. You got all the shit that other people don't want?
Yeah, that's the deal. Yeah.
That's just a joke. Let's tell the people the other music. Manuel Armida from up in Yellowknife. Well, he's actually from Mexico, but that's where he's living now. Secrets of Songs, a Railroad Spike from The Voice. No, Forms The Voice. This is fucking Roscoe Mitchell, incredible musician, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he's playing with Sandy Ewan, Damon Smith, Walter Weasel. And then Does It Go Backwards from Helvetia, brand new. And finally, Parallel System, System 9, Rambutan, Mike Bullock, Philip Todd, Jefferson Pitcher, and of course Eric Hardin. So, I can't remember the instructions you gave me, but did you give everybody instructions?
I tried to leave it totally open. I wanted people to do what they wanted to do. Send me whatever you want.
Okay, let me ask you this. How did you decide which dudes went with, or people went with which people?
Well, I started off, it's funny, I started off thinking the project was going to make like one big, like 20-minute, 30-minute piece. I thought it was going to be kind of like the Faust tapes, you know, where it would like kind of do jump cuts and it would go to like a rock part and then maybe go to a weird dub part or whatever. And it got kind of unwieldy and it was crazy. So then
sort of like a soundtrack to a porn movie.
Something like that.
No, remember that fucked up version of that Who? Is it Tommy? And that John Entwistle, he does all the music, and that's what that sounds like to me.
Yeah, kind of.
What was his name? Ken Russell?
It was too hard to pull off, and then I kind of came up with the idea of doing shorter tracks. And once I hit that idea, it was like, oh, I could actually think of this as like groups. Like, I could imagine, like you, I could imagine Mike Watt jamming with Mike Kiefer, jamming with Ray Hare. And because I know everybody that I invited.
Yeah, but Eric, I was man alone. Yeah. I didn't jam with anybody.
But it's a conceptual.
Oh, you would, you would create the jam. Okay, I understand.
Yeah, so the parallel system is kind of like imagining what it would be if these four or five musicians were together in the same room, even though they're all over the globe and they've never met each other, maybe.
And didn't even hear their music. You were like the Meister behind the curtain.
That's the plan, yeah. And it kind of got bigger and bigger. I got more tracks and like more people were sending, and people surprised me. Like John Olson sent me 30 minutes worth of music.
Of course.
Some people sent me like 10 seconds worth. Some people sent me, you know, 5 minutes. Like, it was all over the map, and it wasn't what I expected.
What did I send?
You sent me just a solid bass line.
How long?
I think it was like 2 or 3 minutes long. Maybe.
Okay. It wasn't a bogart. It wasn't a windbag.
No, it was beautiful, man. It was so good.
Well, I was thinking an idea. I bet you this guy's going to do something with it to make it part of the tune. So I was thinking more like a skeleton to hang flesh skin and hair and face. Yeah.
And that's kind of how your track worked out. Like, some of the tracks weren't like that. Some of them was like just like a big soup, a big pot of soup where all the stuff goes in. And it's not so much like a skeleton. But yours was like, all right, this bass line is the skeleton. Let me, you know, kind of work everything else around it. So it's super fun, man. Well,
I want to get into that, okay?
Yeah.
Being a bass player, you could probably relate to my thing, but other situations. But we're at the end of the second hour, June 27, 2021. Dish Watt Peterson, special guest Eric Hardiman. I want to get into, how this other stuff got composed. Hold tight for hour three. June 27, 2021. It's the third hour of the Walk from Pedro show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. We started third hour off. Parallel System, System 10, Rabotan. This one had John Collin, Grant Cates, John Schlesinger, Paul Haney, and Eric Hardiman. And then we had Ron Ruins from Ron Anderson, yesterday's guest. Sunset Through the Trees with the Ruins Cat from Japan. Says number one, this is live at Savoy Tivoli in San Francisco, February 12, 1981, part one of three. Oons, this was a project, the late great Zev, Z-apostrophe-E-V, an incredible inspiration to me from a Hollywood punk scene semi-experience for Watt. Very inspiring. He would have swinging percussion, almost killed by this shit, but that taught me that the movement was about whatever. Bring it.
Yeah.
Let the freak flag fly. And then Parallel System, System 11, Rabotan, Howard Howard Stelzer, John Schoen, Stoibes, Ben Harbert, Paul Haney, and Eric Hardiman. So, like these, you know, no bass guy to relate to, no skeleton to hang the rest of the body parts on. So, you still have to decide, well, you decide first with the intros, right? You make the invites. And then the stuff they give you, there's another set of decisions you got to make, right?
You got it, yeah. And some of it was random. Some of it was like, I would go, hey, man, I wonder what Campbell Neal would sound like with John Olsen, with Mike Watt. And sometimes I'd put them together and I wouldn't like the results. And so I could kind of pull back and say, all right, let's try something different. But sometimes I would go in and I'd say, all right, I want a drum part. I want a bass part. I want some weird electronics.
Yeah, and there's kind of a split, right, between the personas and then the musics.
Totally, you got it.
And sometimes maybe a starting point would be the personas, but then at the end of the day, it was about the music.
And it's weird, too, you know, when I was telling you about the turntables slowing down when I was a kid, I used to also absolutely love playing two things at the same time. Like two tape recorders going at the same time across the room where the two sounds would interact with each other. I still like that, like juxtapositions and
there's
like.
There's a Velvet Underground, The Gift. The motherfucker smails himself right to the girlfriend and gets the scissors in the hand. But like one side, there's a jam going on one side, the other is like this, you know, I think it's John Cale reading it, right?
Yeah. And then every now and then Lou and John would do the same
thing. That's right. Lou would come in with the loud ass voice. But that's so trippy the way to listen to that. I got to do a version of that with Nels Klein.
Recently.
Yeah, it hasn't been released yet, but somebody's putting it together. And again, I'm a piece, a cog in a wheel of a bigger machine. I like to do that. Yeah, now, we were talking off air, people, about bass. What did you learn in the Lost Hills about being bass player? Not just bigger strings, but.
Yeah, bigger strings is part of it, but I think it's being the heart of the sound. You know, it's like the most visceral, it's the drums are the kind of the heartbeat, I guess.
Right.
But I felt like I learned in Burn Hills that the bass kind of drives the music. I could, if I wanted to slow things down, I could do that. I could kind of get the drummers to slow down. Yeah. If I wanted to speed up, if I wanted to take it into something more aggressive, I could kind of steer the ship a little bit as a bass
player. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You're kind of Ralph Cramden.
Yeah.
Norton? Looking at you, looking at me, No, but you know what I mean. Kind of a director. We also talking to people about cinematic quality of this project.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, when different people have heard this project, some people like man, I love the way you're relating it to cinema and movies and directors, actors. Karen, when she heard it, she was like, Eric, it's like you're telling little stories with each song. And I was like, yeah, I hadn't really thought about that. But there is kind of a storytelling narrative kind of thing, too. But everyone's got their own kind of reaction to it, which I love.
There's a couple of directors, right? In a way, you're like Alfred Hitchcock's wife doing the editing.
Yeah.
Right? But then in the other way, you're also the casting director. So even before the film shot, right?
Yeah, totally.
Putting the shit together, right? Yeah.
Okay. You're making me realize things about it that I hadn't even articulated, man. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, I think one of the greatest gifts one music cat can do at another is fucking focus on music.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this is what I felt listening to. I want to play System 12.
山姥と娘。昔あるところにお百姓のお父さんとお母さんがありました。夫婦の間には当になる可愛らしい女の子がありました。ある日お父さんとお母さんは野良へお百姓の仕事をしに行くときに、女の子を一人お留守番に残して、誰が来ても決して戸を開けてはならないよ、と言いつけて鍵をかけて出て行きました。女の子は一人ぼっち取り残されて、寂しくって、心細くって仕方がありませんから、小さくなっていろりに当たっていました。すると、お昼ごろになって、外の戸をトントン叩く音がしました。だーれ、と女の子が言いました。私だよ、すぐに開けておくれ。とおばあさんらしい声が聞こえました。でも開けてはいけないんだって、お父さんとお母さんがそう言ったから、と女の子は言いました。なんだって、よしよし、開けてくれなければこの戸を蹴破ってやる。こう言って、いきなり戸に手をかけて、みりみり動かしながら、両足でどんどんどんどん蹴飛ばしました。女の子はびっくりして、困って、仕方がないものですから、戸を開けてやりました。戸を開けると、ぬっと恐ろしい顔をした山姥が入ってきて、炉端に足を投げ出して、おう、寒い寒い、と言いました。おばあさん、何しに来たの？と女の子は尋ねました。お腹がすいた。早くご飯の支度をしろ。と山姥は怖い顔をして言いつけました。女の子は、ブルブル震えながら、台所へ行って、ご飯のいっぱい入ったお鉢を持ってきました。山姥はお鉢の蓋を開けて、手づかみでせっせとご飯を詰め込みながら、たくあんを丸ごともりもりかじっていました。その間に女の子はそっとうちから抜け出して逃げて行きました。どんどん逃げていって山の下まで来るとご飯を食べてしまった山姥がいくら探しても女の子がいないので大層怒っておうおうと言いながら追っかけてきました。ずいぶん一生懸命かけたのですけれど山姥の足に小さな女の子がかなうはずはありませんから、ずんずん追いつかれて、もう一足で山姥に肩をつかまれそうになりました。女の子は夢中で一生懸命逃げますと、山の上から芝を背中に背負って降りてくるおじいさんに出会いました。おじいさん、おじいさん、山姥が追っかけてくるから助けてください、と女の子は言いました。おじいさんは、よしよし、と言って、背中の芝を下ろして、その中に女の子を隠しました。すると、山姥が追っかけてきて、おじいさんに、女の子はどこへ行ったと尋ねました。おじいさんがわざとあそこにと言って 向こうに積んである芝を指さしますと、山乳母はいきなりその芝に抱きつきました。すると、その芝はちょうど崖の上に立てかけてあったものですから、山乳母は自分の体の重みで芝を抱えたまま、コロコロと谷底へ転げ落ちました。その暇に女の子はどんどん逃げて行きました。すると山乳母はまた谷底から這い上がって、おうおうと言いながら後から追っかけて行きました。女の子がまた一生懸命逃げますと、また一人のおじいさんがそこで蚊帳を買っていました。おじいさん、おじいさん、山乳母が来るから助けてください。と女の子が言いますと、おじいさんはよしよしと買ってある蚊帳の中に隠してくれました。やがて山乳母が追っかけてきますと、おじいさんはわざと向こうの崖の上にある蚊帳の束を指さしました。山乳母がいきなり蚊帳の束にむしゃぶりつきますと、弾みで滑ってコロコロと谷底に転がりました。その間に女の子はまたどんどん逃げて行きました。そのうちとうとう大きな沼の淵に出ました。やがて山乳母も谷底から這い上がってまた追っかけてきました。女の子はもうこの先逃げて行くことができなくなって沼の淵に立っている大きなカシの木に登りました。すると山乳母が追っついてきて、どこへ行った、どこへ行った、どこまで逃げたって逃がすものか、と言いながら、キョロキョロそこらを見回しますと、木の上に登っている女の子の姿が沼の水に映りました。山乳母はいきなりその映った姿をめがけて、沼の中に飛び込みました。女の子はその間に木の上から飛び降りて、沼の岸の熊笹を分けて逃げて行きますと、一軒の小屋がありました。中へ入ると、若い女の人が一人、留守番をしていました。女の子はこの女の人に、山乳母に追われてきたことを話して、椅子の筆の中へ隠してもらいました。すると間もなく、山乳母はまた沼から上がって、どんどん追っかけてきました。そして、小屋の中に入ってきて、女の子が逃げてきたろう、早く出せ、と怒鳴りました。私は知らないよ。すると山乳母は疑い深そうに鼻をクンクン鳴らして、ふんふん、人臭い、人臭い、と言いました。なあに、それは私がスズメを焼いて食べたからさ。そうか、そんなら少し寝かしておくれ。あんまりかけてくたびれた。おばあさん、おばあさん、寝るのは石の筆にしようか、木の筆にしようか。石の筆は冷たいから、木の筆にしようよ。こう言って、山乳母は木の筆の中に入って寝ました。山乳母が筆の中に入ると、女は外からピンと錠を下ろしてしまいました。そして石の筆の中から女の子を出してやって、 山姥を木の筆の中に入れてしまったから、もう大丈夫だ、と言って、太い霧を出して、火の中に突っ込んで、真っ赤に焼きました。この焼いた霧を木の筆の上から差し込みますと、中で山姥が寝ぼけた声で、なんだ、二十日ネズミか、うるさいぞ、と言いました。その間に女は筆に穴を開けて、ぐらぐら煮え立っているお湯を穴から継ぎ込みますと、中で、熱い、熱い、と叫びながら、山姥はドロドロに煮え崩れて死んでしまいました。女は山姥を殺して、女の子と一緒に家へ帰りました。この人も、元は山姥にさらわれて、こんなところに来ていたのでした。
Walk for Pedro show last music for this edition. Parallel Systems with System 12, Rabotan Praj, Phil Todd, Ray Hare, Andreas Brandi, no, Brandl, sorry, excuse me, Artu Partinen, and Eric Hardeman. Then the Mountain Witch, like a demon lady, right? And her daughter from Few, it's an old folk story from Japan. And Parallel Systems, finally, Systems 13. It ain't finally, because there's 20 other ones, but we'll listen to those further Watt for Pedro show editions, people, because we're out of time. But this has Peter Wright, Sindre Berge, Phil Donnelly, Ali Robertson, Ray Hare, Mike Griffin, and Eric Hardeman. Now, some of these, well, why are they called System? Why is the whole thing called Parallels? Because it's like kind of a universe and parallel planets in orbit, or?
It's kind of like that, yeah. I mean, so it's funny, man. I never thought it was going to turn into CDs and be like a real project. It was kind of an exercise for me just to kind of do something during the pandemic originally. And then it got to be, as it grew and grew, and as I finished each track, I started to think, all right, I got to do something with this because I want to share it with people. And so I thought it would be all digital on Bandcamp or whatever. And then Rob Foreman, who runs Settlemental Records, you know, he's a great dude. He was like, hey, we got to do this up as a 2-CD. We got to figure out something to call it. And I didn't have a name for the project. I was just, you know, it was just my collaboration thing. And so I kind of sat down and thought about it for a while, and I was like, each track seems like its own thing. It's its own system. It's its own little world. Planets. I don't know. That's a good analogy too. So
under
seemed
itself,
like it worked.
You know what's trippy? Some systems have way fewer people than other ones. But that is all from a music thing, right? Because the persona thing got left behind once they did their submission. Okay.
So, and I got to tell you, man, I was worried about it. I thought, you know, especially like people who hadn't heard their tracks, I thought, what if I send it to, you know, to you or to someone else and they weren't into what I did with it? But so far, everybody's been really happy.
They're dicks because they shouldn't have gotten involved in the first place. God damn it. They don't trust you. Now, Eric, where can people, well, you said Bandcamp, it's up there, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's the place to find it, rambutan.bandcamp.com.
And people, you spell rambutan, R-A-M-B-U-T-A-N. Now, but the physical thing, how can they?
They can get that there, too. They can order the CDs there or through Sedimental Records or Forced Exposure.
Oh, Byron Coley.
Byron's a good man. Yeah, Byron's, yeah.
Okay.
Man, that guy has shaped my musical listening quite a bit.
What's the other label he's got? Feedin' Tube?
Feedin' Tube, and I mean, he used to have Ecstatic Yod.
That's right.
Yeah.
He's got records. I think that's what his main thing is, selling off his records. It's just so fucking huge. He's great cat. I love that man. He's going to be on the show in a couple months. Okay,
nice,
and where
nice.
Can people find you on the internet?
That's a good question. Bandcamp's probably the best way to tell.
There's no Eric Hardeman website.
No, well, there's also my label, which I didn't talk about, but I have my own label, which is kind of a DIY tape and record label called Tape Drift. So they can Google Tape Drift Records and find me there.
Use the search engine. There's lots of search engines on the internet, people.
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
It's like saying Kleenex for tissue.
You got it.
Right? Or saying, what's that P word for like these shows on the internet? I won't use that word. Why be a fucking shill? They don't even make that machine anymore. But anyway, that's semantics. It's a big honor to have you on the show, Eric. And I love the opportunity you gave all these cats to come together. When we could be sitting on the hands and complaining and bitching and moaning, feel sorry. We got productive. You made us part of a big music project. That's the most beautiful gift you could give to fellow musicians.
Man, it kind of blows me away to hear you say that, but I got to thank you for all the music over the years and for, you know, having me on the show, for being willing to contribute to the project. Like getting you and Guy on board was huge for me because it was like, man, if these cats are willing to trust me, that says something.
You know, when I first met Guy, he was a bass man in Rite of Spring and something fucked up on my bass. Remember opening up for HR when he did his first solo band at the old 930, and he lent me his bass, and the neck was fucking cracked. And so when you played it, man, that shit pinched your palm.
Oh, man. He's such a good guy. I mean, we go, you know, I grew up kind of at the old 930. That was in high school. I went there all the time. And so.
Respect. F Street, right? In the alley is.
Yeah, F Street. You got it.
Big rats.
Big
rats.
Anyway,
we'll have you on again when you get some new music, man.
I'll get you back on, okay?
It's big honor, Ed, truly. People, it's been 227, 2021 edition of Watt for Pivo. She'll keep your powder dry.